Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. And here we are on March 26th. And yes, I am back home now in Sedona, Arizona, where I was in Texas for the last 2 weeks. Enjoyed my time there. It's always nice to be back home. Last 2 weeks was kind of a whirlwind for me. We had the wonderful workshop that we had in Dallas-Fort Worth. It was my first one. Kind of got that under the wings. And what I want to do tonight, I'm going to take about 5 to 10 minutes just to talk about some update information, give you a little information of what happened in the workshop. And from there, we'll just then we're going to open it up. I'm going to bring Exogen on tonight. He's the guest tonight. He is basically the director of the website S3Alpha.net. And they have had just each week, they are just getting more and more people signed up to the website as an absolutely great source of information for everybody that's wanting to learn about what's going on out there in Dinar land. Okay, let me talk about the workshop. How do I say this without sounding like I'm bragging? I really don't want to do that, but it exceeded my expectations. And I guess let me say this. This is one of the things I have learned over the years. When you attend a workshop or a seminar, and when it comes time that it's at the end, you can usually, when it's over, you can usually tell how successful it is by watching the people. Do they get up and they leave right away when it's over, or do they hang around and they don't want to go home? And, folks, that's what happened for us. We started at 9:30 in the morning. We were done at 4:30. I opened it up for an open Q&A. Very, very few people left. The Q&A went on for an hour to an hour and a half. And then after that, the people hung around for another 45 minutes to an hour just talking to each other. It was like they just did not want to quit. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experience is what it was. So it was great to be there, great to have it. And hold on, excuse me, just 1 minute there. I needed to type something on my computer. And it was very beneficial. I'm getting just tons of emails from the folks that attended the workshop and say thank you. And we had some really big surprises. I have never gone on public with this a whole lot, but when people ask me about what broker do I recommend to buy Dinar or Dong, and I want to respect all the great brokers that are out there, but there's one that I always refer to just because their service has always been really good, and it's silvergreetings.com. And the name of the gentleman who runs that business, he's in New York City, his funny name, Abraham Merchant. That's his actual really name. And I called him up and said, hey, Abraham, I want to do something. And what I wanted to do was give a 50 dinar note away to everybody that was present. Abraham ended up donating those. Everybody there got a 50 dinar note and a 10,000 dong note. Folks, when you stop to think about that 10,000 dong note, you are realizing that at 47 cents, that thing just turns into about $4,700. I had jokingly referred to the folks and saying, hey, those of you coming, you know, to the workshop, it's going to more than pay for itself. It more than paid for itself when they were basically able to receive all the money that was there. Now, in the newsletter I sent out a lot of you have asked, am I ever going to do videos of them? I didn't want to do the first one. And I'm going to wait and see whether or not I do the next one. And the reason is because, see, when the RV happens, the content is going to change, and then a part of it is outdated. And can I just be really honest also? You know, the first one, you got some of your bugs to work out, and so I didn't want to do a DVD or a live streaming on the first one with that. But we have scheduled for the next one. The next workshop is going to be April 26th in Philadelphia. And that's for you folks up in the Northeast, because, you know, whether you live from Boston, New York, Philadelphia, or wherever, you should be able to go ahead and drive to that if you want to do that. So, yeah, so that will be fine. So April 26th, I don't have the details yet, but set that time aside if you want to come to the one in Philadelphia. That is a Saturday. And again, we'll do the whole thing. It starts at 9:30 in the morning. We will be done about 4:30 or 5, and then we go into an open Q&A. And I can tell you, in the next week or two, I'll be producing kind of a newsletter that gives an update about it with some of the videos from some of the folks, so you can kind of really see what happened. And you'll get to hear from them, not just me, about how beneficial it was, okay? Now, what's happening on some of the update stuff? Because now, yeah, it's been 3 weeks in a row that I've been saying it's underway. It is unfolding. And, folks, all I can say is I can't give away confidential information, but all I can say is it is. In the last week, I have talked with two people who have already cashed in. So if you think this isn't for real, this is for real. They have cashed in. They are the real things, folks. And those are the folks that are predominantly involved with humanitarian aid organizations, and they are wanting to clear them out of the way. I don't understand why it didn't happen last Monday like I had thought. I don't understand the details. Hardly anybody knows that at this time about what really is going on with all of that stuff. But what we do know is it is taking place. It is underway, and we don't know when it's going to go public. But from the data and the intel that I am receiving from folks, it can be from a point to any day to possibly up until around mid-April, and which could be another 3 weeks. But there's stuff going on behind the scenes that very, very few of us know about it. But we continue to receive information from the people that really do know that what's happening, at least that's what we feel, that it is underway, it is taking place, it is happening. It's a matter of being patient. I know we don't like that, but that's the reality of where we are. Okay? And so that's all I really have for an update. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm about ready to bring our guest on the air tonight. And we're going to go through, and I'm going to do an interview with him that will go on for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then we're just going to open it up, folks. Now, I do need to ask, I do have a limited number of live callers that I can have. And if something happens at some point, I may need some of you to drop off the live callers and go listen on your computer if possible. I hope I don't have to do that, but we'll find out. But I'm really ready to bring this guy on. Hey, XO, are you there?
Hey, how are you, Dave?
Hey, there you are. Hey, you're sounding really good tonight, buddy. How you doing?
All right, fantastic.
Good. Well, folks, let me introduce this guy. He goes by Exogen. That's the name that he has on the website, blog site, whichever you want to call it. It's s3alpha.net, but we call him Exo for short. And I want to just say, hey, thank you so much for coming on the air tonight. I think there's we get so much intel, and we read the blog sites, and we get intel and data and opinion. But sometimes we don't really get to hear who are the people behind that and, like, how did you get involved in this and what is it that motivates you? What is your background that lets you do this and stuff like that? So, XO, take a couple minutes and just tell us a little bit about how you got involved in all this stuff and stuff like that. So go ahead.
Well, here's how I got involved, actually. It was quite interesting because I didn't want to hear it, to be honest with you. A close friend of mine kept contacting me like almost every day and asking me about the dinar. And I had heard about dinar because I think somebody may have given me some, I don't know, maybe a year or two prior to the investment and said this currency was going to revalue. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. And, you know, our background, we've been involved with, you know, banking, real estate transactions. We actually have done commercial transactions, represented different hedge funds, so on and so forth. So, you know, being in that industry, you know, you hear somebody telling you to buy some of this currency, you're like, okay, whatever. So finally, one day they told me, they said, you've got to listen to this conference call. You've got to listen to this conference call. And they were, like, harassing me literally every day about this dinar. You need to get some dinar. You need to get some dinar. I'm like, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, make a long story short, the first call, and then you guys are going to laugh at this. I got on a conference call. It was in the middle of the day with the Oki Oil Man. And these guys were on here talking about companies that were going to invest in the actual components to take the oil out of Iraq. He gave out a list of strategically targeted companies to invest in. I think one of them was like Schlumberger or something like that or whatever it was. But anyway, his whole perspective that kind of caught my attention was, outside of the dinar, was to target the companies that were investing in the infrastructure to extract the oil. So that kind of piqued my interest. And from that point, I started doing more due diligence. The first thing I did was looked on the Internet like most folks do. And the first thing you see when you get online is everything tells you the IQD is a scam. Well, typically from an investment background, from, you know, just doing research and traditionally doing your own due diligence, for the most part, if somebody tells you something is a scam, more likely it may be a bit of truth to what it actually is, and it may be the complete opposite. So after doing some due diligence, not on the currency itself, but on where Iraq was at that particular time, it kind of aroused my curiosity, and, you know, I started doing more diligence, due diligence, and I made my very first purchase at that time. They were talking about dinar trade, I believe, and they showed me some videos of this guy on CNBC talking about the currency. I believe Cramer and Mad Money had even mentioned at that time, what would you rather own? Would you rather own stock or real estate in the country, or the actual currency of the country itself? And so that's how we kind of transitioned to that component. Well, the way we kind of launched the whole entire Stage 3 model, well, it started from several Skype rooms, and, you know, I got to say thanks to everybody who has been with us through this journey, who have been in all of our Skype rooms. You know who you are. As we kind of put this model together, well, what kind of led us to put this model together is some of the contacts that we've dealt with in the industry, from financing to setting up real estate investment trust to charitable remainder trust to, you know, different financial structures, from executive bonus plan structures or whatever, and LLCs. The initial plan was to kind of just coach a few people along as one of our strategic partners who actually has a background tied to some of the largest financial institutions in the world. Was listening into some of the conference calls, and we saw a lot of people really were confused and really didn't know what to do. We heard a bunch of people saying that, you know, the first thing you need to do is run, do this, run, do that, run, do this, run, do that. So that's kind of where the model originated from. We never had any expectation or any intention of this thing going to close to 13,000 people in our life. We thought it was going to just be a few people, but it's kind of evolved, and, you know, one of the things that we kind of did with some of our other strategic alliances that we've worked with in the past who get us information is we started dissecting articles initially and understanding the fundamentals and the components behind what would it take for an RV to take place versus the RV itself. So I think from our initial stance that we took and from doing our due diligence, what that did is that allowed us to kind of not be caught on the roller coaster of the intel hopium from day one, because our entire search and journey was more so what components are needed for an RV to take place versus looking for the RV itself. Like, what is IMF Article 4? What is IMF Article 8? What is IMF Article 14? What does the Central Bank of Iraq have to do? How does this work? How does that work? What does the Council of Ministers need to do? So we started our due diligence in that area, but at the same time, from our banking contacts that we had, from Wall Street bankers to folks who've built the bank infrastructure, who actually kind of educated us on the transition from one of the big tier one banks as they transitioned from a strategic alliance they had and the acquisition from an entity in London, and from there, we kind of got involved with understanding the Midas Plus, transition from Midas Plus to the Mises software, from having people on the inside of the bank infrastructure. And so from having that component, from having the component of understanding how the articles took place, along with some other sources that we have with different agencies, just through existing relationships, be it political or so on and so forth, that's kind of how we evolved to be a complete, the complete package on looking at the entire RV from all perspectives. Because, see, you've got certain people that look at the RV from only the Iraq standpoint. Then you've got others who look at the RV strictly from a Hopium standpoint. You've also got others who only look at the RV from a perspective that's tied to the world global settlements and the prosperity packages. But the reality of the investment is you have to take bits and pieces from all of this and understand what's taking place in order to eat this elephant. You know, typically you always hear, what's the best way to eat an elephant? You've got to eat it piece by piece. Well, you're getting pieces and pieces and pieces, but if you don't put the pieces together in a systematic, organized format, it's not going to make sense. And so I think that's how our web portal evolved from a complete perspective of the investment itself as to what's needed to trigger it versus it's going to happen every day. And so I think that's kind of how, from that, from an educational standpoint, from what bank account do you need to do, how do bank accounts work, multiple currency accounts, so on and so forth, I kind of think that's what we did to separate ourselves or somewhat create a paradigm shift in this dinar universe or dinar planet, as whatever we want to call it. And so I think it's the education that kind of is what's driving our website, because for one, we don't do Intel conference calls. We don't do regularly scheduled conference calls, and it's obvious that there's something, and in our opinion, it's the information and education that's what's driving folks to join our website, Dave.
Wow, absolutely wonderful. Because, yeah, I mean, you've just shared stuff with me that I didn't expect from you. So what I'm hearing from you is there's obvious a really good background in banking and finance and how all that fits into the picture, being able to do research. And then you've brought together a team where you get a lot of good intel from. And we don't always see that on the website or on the blog site. We don't see that there's a team that you have that is always in constant contact and communication with each other. And within this team are different people that are just absolute top-of-the-line experts in their field. And I think you're absolutely right is, you know, each person kind of brings in a different perspective. And it's what I had shared in my newsletter last week. This whole thing is so big, it's really beyond any one person. And it's kind of like the old, you know, Hindu parable of the blind man describing the elephant. Everybody can see it differently. It's just because it's so big. And you have to be able to willing to take and receive that, Dan, that there's multiple varied opinions out there. And those opinions are all over the map, but they all have some value to them. And I think that's what I've seen in your site and also that what you've done with that. And I think, you know, you've done a very good job on that. You know, you really touched on something also I wanted to mention is about the idea about when it's called a scam. Because when you go on the Internet and you look it up and they say it's a scam, some people will post that deliberately just to move you away from it. And here's what I'm also finding in my own responses. And when I have people who send me emails and say, oh, you're just in a scam, you're a scam artist, I find that those who call it a scam are those who are too lazy to do their own research. They get one quick issue and they shoot from the hip and call it a scam and they have no idea what they're talking about and they just won't go out and do their homework. And I think it's like what you said early on. What got me involved in it, it was when I realized, and I was able to see it somewhat from the political side, that it was absolute common sense that Iraq is at some point in time going to revalue their currency. They don't want to stay a war-torn, poverty, beat-up country when they are one of the richest asset countries in the world. It was always just a matter of time. It was only going to be, it wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when and what is going to be the rate. And that's what continues to unfold. And I think that picture is becoming more and more clear every day. How about you? How do you see that?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, if you look at you know, we have to really understand how the markets work and how the markets operate and the global perspective of banking. And, you know, some of the things that we touch on range from dark liquidity pools, so on and so forth. But I think the bigger picture of this investment as to why it's being portrayed as a scam, you can also just transition that thought on that ideology and concept to how the markets work and how the markets move. So let's just take the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and MSNBC on the Bloomberg television channel as to what they show you on television with the live feeds. Okay, for those who understand dark liquidity and how institutional investors work and things of that nature, they're going to win whether the market goes up or down. It's a win-win situation for them. So what you have to look at in reference to the ID scam concept is, if this thing is really such a scam as folks say it is, why do you have institutional investors investing in the country, actively involved? Why do you have certain hedge funds investing in the infrastructure? Why are they doing all this funding to set up a war-torn country that we invaded? What's the catch? What is it to this that we're not missing? Is there a gem in this literally quote-unquote location of the cradle of civilization? And we're not going to go too far on that. But is there something that we're missing here? So why are people focusing and spending money here? Why do you have Fortune 100 companies investing in this country? So when you look at it from that perspective, you know, I was always told, find folks who have what you want, do what they do, and you'll get what they've got. So if the folks with money are dumping it over there, you know, I looked at it, hey, that's where I need to be too.
You know, I come back and said, I remember when I first started in this, and I wasn't involved, and somebody said, well, you ought to do this. And I said, my first question was, well, who's going to pay for the trillions of dollars it's going to take to pay for this revalue? And they talked about what was done in the oil credits with China and stuff like that. And that's when all of a sudden it clicked for me. And that's when I realized, no, wait a minute. Iraq has the largest natural gas reserves in the world. They have the second largest oil reserves in the world. They are the third largest agricultural producing region in the world. They have tons of gold underground that they haven't even dug up yet. And you're trying to tell me that their currency is going to stay where it's at? They can't even improve their country. I've given this illustration as Iraq is like these people that are sitting on top of a gold mine and they can't even get the shovels to dig out the gold until they revalue their currency. Now, you're trying to tell me that isn't going to happen? I just thought, you know, come on. It's common sense it's going to happen. So, and you've hit on some good stuff. And it's just because from a pure investment standpoint, it's common sense. You touched on a term that we talked about earlier when people ask about this and says, but the other thing we have to realize is that it's always just a speculation. Expound on that a little bit.
As far as a speculative investment. Well, you know, here's the reality with this. And you know, we on our website on a day-to-day basis, okay, and just, by the way, I want to say, hey, everybody on our website, hey, you guys are doing a great job doing whatever you guys do every day. But on our website every day, it's kind of funny because, you know, people go back emotionally frustrated with the investment. So it's what we've kind of tried to do is educate people and say, you know, you really have to look at this from a speculative investment standpoint and take the emotions out of it. Because if you don't eliminate the emotions and think like a hedge fund manager or think like a banker, you're going to be on that roller coaster. And so, you know, the bottom line, this is a speculative investment. And I think what has happened is you've got so many different factions involved in the investment. For one, you've got the guru wars. You've got folks taking sides. Well, this is this guru, this person's right, this person's wrong. whatever, whatever, whereas by us kind of focusing on this being a speculative investment standpoint, all we focused on is, okay, this is a speculative investment, and it's obvious based on what we've seen, there are no rules. So our priority is to put a strategic plan in place. Therefore, we can put together an antidote for any venom we may encounter or an action for every reaction we may encounter. So for our whole thing is to plan, and strategy, because you've got to be prepared, because in the event that this rate goes live in this speculative investment, there are a lot of things that may happen, so you have to be prepared to encounter the unknown or the unseen. And I think that is kind of our perspective of this speculative investment. You got to literally, it's almost like you're going up against, it's almost like you're in the Super Bowl and you're playing against a team, okay? You know, every team you've played all year, you've seen their plays they've been running, you've read their playbooks, you've got footage on it, you've been studying it and studying it and studying it. So the day you get to the Super Bowl, you're now up against a team and you don't have any plays, you don't know anything about this team, you don't have any documentation on it, you don't know who their coach is, you don't know what plays they may run or anything. So that's how this speculative investment is. You've got to be ready and have a plan and strategy in place to encounter whatever it is that may come your way. And that's how we view the whole concept of a speculative investment.
Yeah. And I tell folks, and I've mentioned this, and I think, you know too, I've been a part-time market trader for about 18 years, and I just said, this is speculation, folks. That means we can give you an estimation, we can paint a picture somewhat, but there's absolutely no guarantees because the information is not absolutely solid, because it could turn on a dime and it could go in the opposite direction. But I also said, from a speculation investment, and I thought with issues of probability of return, this was one of the absolute best investments I'd ever seen in my 18 years of being around market trading. I mean, for as little as $130, you could end up, you know, turning that into hundreds of thousands of dollars. And even if it just came out with $3,000, tell me where you can get that kind of return anywhere else. And then on top of that, if you go out and spend $130 and after 5 years you feel like, gee, this isn't going to go anywhere, you could turn around and resell it and still get over half your money back. Now, that just doesn't happen very often in any type of speculative investments in the investment industry. This is one of the best investments I've ever seen in my life. How about you?
Hey, Dave, look. When I got in this investment, this may sound crazy, my hopes and dreams were this investment went to a nickel or at a maximum of a quarter. And I said I would have won.
Yeah.
So when you look at the real numbers here, I mean, this is, you know, I'm going to tell you what amazes me. You know, as we see folks, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people see people buying lottery tickets or playing the numbers or doing the scratch-offs every day. And, you know, you can't tell them about this because they wouldn't understand it. But, you know, I say to myself when I see these folks, if they only knew about the dinar or some of these other currencies, it's a much better ticket item from a ROI standpoint than playing the lottery.
Oh, hands down, hands down, absolutely hands down. And, you know, not only that, with the dinar, take the dong. I mean, on the probability of a global currency reset. You can go out and you can spend $50 in the dong that could basically turn into $500,000 if it comes out at around 47 to 50 cents. And if you don't like it, turn around and resell it, and the only thing you've lost is your transaction fees on each end. And it's just like, gee, I mean, where can you get that kind of a return on your money? We've never had anything like that. And that comes back to the whole concept of a global currency reset versus just the revalue of the dinar. But yet when you listen to the professionals that are out there, they're saying, folks, it's going to happen. We're going to either have a collapse or a reset, one of the two. The collapse is inevitable, and the reset is the only thing that will stop it. And so let's shift a little bit there. Let's talk a little bit about the GCR versus just the revalue. What do you see on that?
Well, here's what we have found out and understand about the GCR. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. You know, we used to hear folks, you know, a while back discussing things about the world global settlements, prosperity packages, the goal, how would an RV be funded, the Fed is broke, collapsed, whatever, whatever. And, you know, at that time, we weren't where we are now as, you know, having a full understanding of the global perspective of this thing. But as far as the GCR, from a global currency reset, well, there's several factors and several reasons behind a global currency reset. And for those of you who read the opinion posted today, that kind of covered a few of the factors, but let me just touch on a couple of those. Well, one of the things you've got to look at is where are we right now as a planet, as a globe, from a financial standpoint? Well, we all know that the Federal Reserve note, or the United States dollar, has been the backbone of the entire global architectural financial infrastructure. We all understand that the United States dollar, or this Federal Reserve note, once again, has been the backbone of the petrodollar from the inception of the petrodollar move, which kind of has positioned the United States to be a superpower. Because if you think about it, if you control the oil, what all do you control? Not only do you control global economies, but you control global military infrastructures, because global military infrastructures need oil. So when you look at this GCR from that perspective, when you understand how the fiat banking system and the currency system has literally just gone berserk or bonkers with fractional banking, it's created a global problem that has to be fixed. Now, if you look at the BRICS countries or get a full understanding of the MINT countries, that will give you a lot of insight as to why these countries have said, look, we're tired of this mess. We're going to circumvent the IMF and the World Bank and put our own system together. We're going to start doing our own currency swaps. We're going to start trading outside of the United States dollar with currency that has value. And so when you look at that from the global perspective, when you look at what the IMF did as far as restructuring some of their protocol as to where you can now monetize tapped and untapped natural resources, traditionally the focal point was, you know, monetization of tapped resources. Well, now you can monetize untapped natural resources. So when you understand what has happened with the derivatives, when you understand with the United States being the backbone of the planet as far as the reserve currency of the world, and what has happened with the Federal Reserve notes and where the Federal Reserve banking system is right now, it's common logical sense. You can literally throw all the intel out the door and understand that there's a problem and it has to be fixed. And as you just said, Dave, there are only two options, either crash it or reset it.
Yep, yeah. And most of the people that are saying that the crash is inevitable and the reset is the only thing that will stop it. You know, you touched on something there about what's happening in the news in just the last couple of days, and that's with the vote in Congress about the 2010 issue with the restructuring of the IMF and the vote in Congress. And you wrote an great opinion piece today. So go ahead and expound on that a little bit.
Well, here's a component that a lot of folks don't understand. You know, everybody got hyped up on, yay, the IMF reforms, but you've got to also look at the reforms as to what that really means. See, you got to take yourself out of the shoes of yourself and put yourself in the shoes of a global superpower. Now, if you're a global superpower, your currency is the reserve currency of the world, you control the petrodollar since its inception, and you now have emerging market economies looking to increase their voting percentages, which is going to kind of knock you down a notch or two, which is going to limit the control you've had for all of these years in conjunction with the International Monetary Fund. There's going to be a war and there's going to be a struggle, because you're not going to want to give that up that easy. And so if you look at what's taking place with that, if you look at what Jack Lew has been doing as far as going to Brazil and going to Mexico, and how the United States just mysteriously got a AAA credit rating the other day, all of those are the telltale signs as to there is a scramble and a race to do something, because countries no longer want the United States dollar. And, you know, if you look, for those of you who track the Forex, you can kind of understand which currencies are not really trading in the U.S., countries are not trading in the USD, which currencies don't want the Federal Reserve notes anymore. So just looking at it from that perspective, you know, the bigger picture, when it comes back to this IMF reforms scenario, the United States does not want to give that power up. And so this is a major power struggle taking place.
You know, what's interesting when you say that, remember, my understanding is the IMF was a creation of the United States, and so they've always had basically complete total veto power on anything that is there. And because they controlled the U.S. dollar was the world's reserve currency, and they basically dominated, you know, the global financial scene. What I'm seeing in that vote is I'm not certain they're really thinking through what they're doing, because their refusal to budge a little tiny step and give these other stronger emerging countries a little bit more of a say and to balance it out, I think it could potentially backfire totally on the United States, because I think, you know, the BRIC countries and their coalition of countries could come together and say, we don't need the IMF anymore. We can do it on our own. If you aren't going to play ball with us, then fine. We're just going to go create our own game and watch the IMF collapse and then watch the dollar collapse. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. And either way, you know, just based on what's taking place, we already understand that a collapse of the United States dollar is inevitable. And, you know, just from some things we've seen, because if you just look at how many countries are now exiting the United States dollar, if you look at the, let's just go back and look at the United States treasuries as to where they are now. Nobody wants them anymore. Typically, when market fluctuations took place, the first thing investors would do was to park their money in the United States treasuries, because they've always been a safe haven. Regardless of whatever takes place in the market, if something is taking place or some changes are going down, hey, park your funds in United States treasuries. Well, that has now gone in total reverse, and nobody wants these United States treasuries, which are tied to these Federal Reserve notes. So when you look at that, when you look at not wanting to give up, I guess it's almost like you could look at it from a National Geographic channel perspective. The United States does not want to let anybody in their watering hole. They don't want to give this watering hole up, but we're at a point now where something literally, it's almost like there is no turning back and something has to give, and I think it's going to give, Dave.
You know, it's interesting. You say the United States doesn't want anybody in their watering hole, and the rest of the countries are coming strong enough to saying, we don't need your watering hole anymore. We don't need
exactly.
Your watering hole. We'll just go, because we are now strong enough to create and have our own watering hole. Goodbye. And I thought, man, with, you know, when Congress refused to budge that little bit, it's like I'm thinking, they just don't get it. They don't understand. It's like, you think you want to give up this power. You don't have that power anymore. I said, the United States is so far in debt that they don't have that political, economic power anymore that they used to, and they can't call the shots. And I think they're living in a dreamland of thinking that they have financially have that power. And by the refusal to play ball with the others, it's they're setting themselves up for complete collapse. And it's just like,
exactly.
Wow. Yeah. And if you look at this from, try not to be biased because we're so biased toward the United States, if you look at it from a true international perspective, on the other hand, the collapse, the thing that can release the global currency reset and have a much better balance for all of us all around the world. I think the rest of the countries around the world have come to the point in saying, United States, you have been so dominant, so greedy, so arrogant in your power and your control over the rest of us for so long that they've gotten tired of it. And they have now come strong enough, and they are saying, game over. We're not going to take your greed and power and arrogance anymore.
And you know, I agree with you. And, you know, if you look at it, by the way, I've got some coaches here sending me things on Skype here while I'm on this call. And it's kind of funny. Somebody just mentioned the fact that what Mexico is now doing is they're allowing their people to own the oil and not necessarily the country, which you could kind of almost look at as a hybrid HCL model, you know, where the people are part of it versus the country and the government itself. And, you know, when you look at this from a global perspective, when you look at folks waking up worldwide, it is people waking up worldwide, Dave, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, here, let me do this. I need to just kind of give a little bit of a break here and remind folks that the call-in number is 646-716-8069. That's 646-716-8069. And, folks, I would like to ask you this. My radio show limits me to 50 live call-ins at a time. And there might be some people who would like to call in that would like to come on the air and ask some questions, but they can't get in. If it is possible for you to go and listen, all you want to do is listen and listen on your computer and open up some of the phone lines. Folks, would you be willing to do that so that maybe others could come in and they may want to call in and ask questions? Because some people call in and all they want to do is listen. They don't necessarily want to come in and talk a little bit later. Okay, Exo, let's do this. Now, we've been talking about finance and international politics, international finance and stuff like that. Let's try to come back to some of the practical stuff of the RV. Tell me, in your opinion, what do you see has been developing and how close this is and how close do you think this could actually happen? And what's been the difference when we're seeing soon today versus we've been saying soon 3 and 4 months ago?
Well, it's a lot of things that have taken place that we haven't had in place. For one, if you look at what took place last week in Switzerland, the World Trade Organization had a meeting with Iraq, and this was in reference to the ascension into the World Trade Organization. Then, you know, if you gain a full understanding as to what these delays are, if you look at where the concept of herbal is, the HCL, if you look at those components in Iraq, if you look at where our dollar is and where the way countries are exiting out of the USD, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of research to realize that something is about to happen. And so from a timeline perspective, you know, a lot of folks have been hearing every day for years and years and years and years. But just based on things taking place right now, it really does appear that we are right now in a window where something could actually happen and take place. And, you know, from what we're looking at, you know, we don't really get into dates and rates and all that kind of stuff, but just from what's taking place from a political standpoint, from a monetary perspective, from a trade perspective, from a forex perspective, what's taking place with the rupee and so on and so forth, I would safely say, and this is just in my honest opinion, you know, I would say, and I don't like doing this type of stuff because people try to hold you to a date and a rate. That's all everybody wants to do, is a date and a rate. But
that's all they want.
I would be confident enough to say that if we don't see something by, I would say, April 1st is a window, a real good window. We're in a good window just based on what's taking place with the bonds. But I'm saying if we don't see something in April, I will be shocked.
Yeah. You know, I've been in my last couple of weeks, I've been saying absolute things that had to happen before the RV could take place. Number one was what took place last summer, when Iraq when the UN voted to take Iraq out of Chapter 7 status. That was an absolute. There was not going to be any RV until that happened because they were not going to revalue their currency when they were still under economic sanctions from the United Nations. And that happened in June 27th. And then the second thing, and this is what I always say, you can ask all kinds of questions all you want. You can speculate all you want, but it always comes down to the bottom line, who's footing the bill? Who's going to pay for these trillions of dinar to be revalued? And I have always said that kind of money, there's only one place on this planet that it exists, and that's with all that gold that's in Asia, and it's predominantly with two sources, you know, the Dragon family and the Sukarno Trust. And so the second thing was they had to release the gold, i.e. the bonds that is backed up by the gold, and that just happened a couple of weeks ago. So money isn't going to come to us until somebody is going to pay for it. And 2 weeks ago, they started putting that into motion. And that's what you talked about. And that was the release of the historic bonds. And from and that has been predominantly been under the trusteeship of Sukarno's son. And he released that a couple weeks ago on March 11th. And that's when we started hearing all this news that the bonds were put in place, the money has been released to the banks, and it's now in place. And so that was the first thing. And what I have continued to hear is that the people who are now releasing the money, they wanted to finish what were called the private, not group, but the private contracts to what are the predominantly large humanitarian aid organizations, because they want to get all of that off the shelf before they bring it to the public. So what are you hearing on that second step that I just mentioned about that?
Well, yeah, you're 100% correct. There are several factors that had to take place first. And one of those things did tie into conversion. It tied into the goal. And I think the biggest thing that a lot of folks in Dinar Land did overlook is, okay, everybody wants to get rich, but where is the money going to come from? So who's going to foot the bill? Where is enough money going to come from to cover all of these dinar holders? So, you know, if you look at the gold moves that have taken place, as a matter of fact, I think just probably in the last couple of days, Iraq just did a small gold move, 36 metric tons. But, you know, when you look at what has to take place to fund something of this magnitude, there's got to be a funding source. And you're right, Dave, it goes back to China. It goes back to the Chinese elders. And, you know, a lot of folks have said those things are mythical. Those folks don't exist. But, folks, it's time you go ahead and swallow this elephant piece, because the elders are tied to funding this GCR. And as this thing is going to take the process of the bonds and the bonds, which are funded by the gold, from there you're going to see an RV, and from there you'll see a GCR.
Absolutely. There isn't enough money on this planet in its current economic structure to pay for this RV and GCR. That gold in Asia is the only place there is that much money to fund it. And I'm one of those. In fact, it's interesting, you know, Exo, because in the last week, I have personally met face-to-face with two different people who have some of those bonds. And I am one of those who has personally had one of those in my hand. And that's what really, that was about 2.5 years ago for me. And that's when I realized this is for real. This is a real bond. This is not a fake. This is not a counterfeit. And I knew that there's something going on here. And again, in the last week, I was able to meet with two different people who are both, they currently have some of those bonds in their possession. And so I realized this stuff was for real for me. So, hey, let's do this. We need to start moving into some of the callers to make sure that we can get through all those tonight, unless there's any one thing else that you want to say that you feel is really important. Are you doing that, or are we ready to go into some of the callers?
Yeah, I would just tell folks to, you know, hang in there, because we're closer to the end than we are at the beginning.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, folks, we're going to start going into the callers here, and I've already got, probably about 5 or 6 that are being lined up that they want to talk. So, but we have about another hour and 10 minutes left in the program, and we're going to go to our first caller, and this guy is a guy by the name of Terry from North Carolina. Terry, you're here on the air with Exo and myself. How can we help you?
Yes, this question is for you first, Dave. You had touched on a little bit about the humanitarian and you made a distinction between the large humanitarian, and you mentioned about the humanitarian groups. Are this did I hear you correctly? These are two different separate groups that are exchanging.
Well, there's been talk about the rates, the high rates versus what I call the nominal rate. And some people have heard rates at $32 and $22, and they're thinking that individuals are going to get those rates. My experience in talking with people already been cashed out, they are being told, no, that the high rates are only for the humanitarian aid organizations. They are not for individuals. And the word that we are seeing is that the individual rate will be $371. Does that answer your question?
Not exactly, because I think you maybe I didn't quite understand what you were saying, but it sounded like you was talking about that there were some philanthropists, and then I think you said something about humanitarian groups. Is that a separate two different entities?
No, they're both one and the same for me. They're just kind of a different. It's a matter of semantics. Whether it's philanthropists or humanitarian aid organizations, I think they're both. I'm referred to them as both as the same. I am not distinguishing them as being different. Yeah.
So the first two that you said, the two that you know personally, are they just the first two to go? Are there the others to follow? Or are they going to be the only two?
They are the ones that are the ones I've talked to are the ones that are at the end of the list, because this has been going on since October. That's what they told me.
Oh, I see. Okay. And the question I have for XO is what I understand is that only certain people, I guess you just answered that, though, because what I understand is certain people would get the higher rate, and that's, I was wondering what the reason why. Why would only certain people get the rate, higher rate, and
well,
others
I mean,
would not?
Well, I can touch on that. It's a lot of factors you have to look at with this exchange, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to. We just have to look at this thing from a realistic perspective. What would really happen in America if everybody in the United States cashed out at a $32 rate? Okay?
Yeah.
Not only is this going to change change the government structure, but it will even change the class. It will create. It would be such a injection into a system. It will literally make the system non-functional. It's functional. So when you look at the higher rates, it makes logical sense that those high rates would be used for humanitarian-oriented projects. Projects to do things from, you know, taking water to countries, building bridges, building highways, food, things on a much larger perspective, which are some of the things that the actual World Bank and IMF are really supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes logical sense for those higher rates to take place like that. And, you know, when you look at the rates, you know, everybody has gotten so caught up into these rates, and it's kind of interesting when we talk to people and they're concerned about how much they're going to lose from not getting a high rate, whereas savvy investors only focus on what their ROI is as to what you're gaining. So folks need to start focusing on what they're gaining versus what they're losing.
Understood. And I had no problem with that. I guess the main thing I was looking for really was, how is it that one goes about getting a higher rate? Is it just humanitarian? Would there not be a higher rate for, I guess, first come, first serve, general public type thing?
Hey, it's just let me simplify that as to an answer to answer your question. And it's real simple as to who goes in and who doesn't go in. The first question you want to ask yourself is, what golf course country club are you a member at, okay? Next question you want to ask yourself is, what bank board of directors do you sit on? Then you want to ask yourself, what nonprofit organization had you made a sizable contribution to? And then you want to ask yourself, what other corporate boards or entities do you sit on? And if your answer is no to any of those questions, as sad as it sounds, for the most part, unless you've got a serious relationship with a wealth manager or some serious ties, you're going in with the general public.
Would you advise to exchange immediately or a wait and see approach?
Well, in any type of investment, the person who rushes in fast typically is the person who makes bad decisions and ends up getting what they may not want. So from an investment standpoint, I don't think anybody should rush to do anything. Because what's the hurry? What's the rush? The whole thing is designed for people to think they have to hurry up and do something so they'll make mistakes and decisions, because you got to understand, the objective here is not for you to win. See, people have a misconception of this investment. Everybody thinks that, oh, these banks, we're going to get rich. No, that's not it. This paperwork is geared that you're going to be signing is geared to protect the banks, not you.
Why does there have to be this specific funding with the gold and everything, the bonds, when people are doing currency exchanges with variable currency now? Why does there have to be special funding? You can go to exchange
what a lot of people didn't understand from day one, see, the United States has had a big private placement contract. So what people didn't understand was, how can these people cash out and others don't? How can they do SKRs and GFRs, so on and so forth? Because it's been a private placement contract in place. So when you look at, and I don't want to go too far down this angle, but when you look at the banking screens, you know, you've got administrative hold, you've got live, things of that nature. So transactions can take place without the general public knowing about them. Just like, ask yourself, why have all these tier one banks taken in trillions of currency and issued SKRs? What are they doing with this currency they have? You think they're just sitting on it, twiddling their fingers? Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the way the system is, and you just need to wait your turn, and I think everything will be okay.
Is it not valid that the two big groups would get a higher rate, the general and admirals?
I can't really go into questions and specifics about those two groups because I don't really know.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you much.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Terry. Right, we're going to go on down the list. Now we're going to another caller. His name is Hector, and he's from Brooklyn, New York. It's coming up on the air. Hector, there you are. You're on the air now with Exo and I. What can we help you with?
Yeah, I have a question as far as coming out with some different types of lower denomination bills, as in like eliminating the zero, deleting those three zeros, as they were saying months ago, and so that way the currency will be less to pay out when it comes down to the currency exchange.
You want to take that, XO?
Well, I mean, are you talking about the concept of new notes coming out, or are you just talking about the removal of zeros?
New currency, as far as like a 25,000 dinar being a 25 dinars.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what's going to take place, and if you look at how monetary policy typically works, what happens is a 25,000 note now becomes a 25, a 50,000 note will become a 50, and let's just say, for example, a $100,000 note will become a 100. So what happens when you take those zeros off, your country now transitions to a comparable monetary system as to what we have here in the United States, which is ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds. That's all that is.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Hector. Okay. Have a good evening. Okay. All right. Next caller, as we go on down the list, we are looking at Shane from Winter Park, Florida. Shane, you're on the air here with Exo and Dave. What can we help you with?
Hi, Exo and Dave. How are you? That's Winterport,
Florida.
Hey,
how are you?
Good.
Good. Not Colorado, which there's two Winter Parks.
Okay.
No, you said it right. You're the lady that answered the phone. She always says that. As a newbie to Exo, your site, and Dave, your site, and the Twitter feed and stuff, I've been drawn into everything that's going on and a lot of the name calling and all this. And I got to tell you, you two complement each other very well and cut through all of some of the garbage. So I would, as a perspective looking outside, looking in, I would recommend that you continue these dual radio shows because I have gained more knowledge just in the last hour than reading all the other stuff, which can become addictive. I have two questions, and one is for Exo, and then the other, Dave, or both of you guys can answer. Exo, can you tell me how the redemption of the Chinese historical bonds plays into this and why the money has not been released for that? And the other question is, I know everybody is saying that we're close to the GCR and the RV. Is that all predicated on the U.S. approving the IMF 2010 reforms?
That's a great question. Well, let's just talk about the bonds first. Well, you know, we don't really go into a bunch of details as the information we get, but 2 weeks ago, we actually know some people who were involved in one of these bonds tied to one of these tranches and funds were moving. So that's kind of how we actually got information as to the fact that the bond moves were taking place and got that rate of 3.71 as that tied to the Iraq bond. So, yeah, in order for this whole process to happen, yes, the bonds have to move first. That's the first step because if you think about it, if the bonds don't move, if the gold certificates are not in place, there's no money to fund the entire process. Did that help you out?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. I'm more referring to, are you familiar with the 1933 reorganization bonds that the elders are redeeming? The farmer's bond, the Liberty bonds, that type of thing. That seems to be stuck in this whole RV GCR situation.
Well, I'll briefly touch on that, and let Dave take the rest of it. But there are actually three different sets of bonds, actually, okay?
Okay.
And there are a set of bonds that countries hold. And what has happened is a lot of folks have a misconception, and they're thinking that we're just going to go on the Internet and find these bonds that we're discussing. But these bonds are not in the amount of the bonds that you guys are looking at on the Internet. I mean, we're talking about some pretty big numbers. You want to kind of touch on that, Dave?
No, I know. Well, I'm involved with the ownership of one of them, the sale of one of them. And the Chinese government has released the tranches, as you just said, the funds to redeem these bonds, historical bonds, that are sovereign bonds. And the holdup of the release of the funds have been tied to the GCR and the RV. And so I'm curious how that plays into it. And then the second thing is everything predicated on the U.S. approving the 2010 IMF reform?
Well,
you want to touch on that, Dave?
Well, I mean, I think both of you guys have said, like Exo, you said there's three different types of bonds. And then, you know, Shane, you just touched on the fact that, you know, with the bonds that are coming out of China. But my understanding, it's not Chinese government. It's predominantly, again, it's back to the Sukarno Trust in conjunction with the Dragon family. And there are different types of bonds, but yet those are still predominantly the ones that are being released or have been released.
Okay.
That's how I understand it.
Okay.
You know, and Exo, you may be able to do this better on the 2010 IMF issue. My impression is it can go on without that. That does not have to happen. Just, you know, the GCR is not dependent upon that because all that, it's like, you know, who's footing the bill? It's not the United States footing the bill. It's the gold that's coming out of China that's footing the bill. So it to me, just common sense logic says they are the decision makers on this, and they don't need the IMF to do that. They can release it when they want to choose to release it.
Yeah, but
they
is really, that
they can release the Vietnamese dong if they wanted to release that?
No,
you know,
right? Yeah, see,
but
yeah,
but
so
is the. I know we've used the we've heard the analogy on the one foot line football, et cetera. Has that always been predicated that the only thing holding it up was the U.S. approving the 2010 reforms, or is that all done? I mean, regardless of the 2010 approval by the U.S., is are we still on the half foot line, that whole type of thing?
You want that, Dave, or you want me to take it?
Oh, Exo.
Well,
take it.
I can tell you my. I can tell you. Well, go ahead, Exo. Then yeah, he wants you.
Well, yeah. I mean, the concept of the reforms. I mean, see, I have a different perspective of that, and I, you know, you got to look at reality here, okay? Let's just go back and look at what took place with our government shutdown, okay? Our government shut down on television. Everybody's watching the government shut down while at the same time we have a meeting with the Bretton Woods Committee. We have a meeting taking place with the International Monetary Fund. We have a Bilderberg conference taking place. And simultaneously, we have a World Trade Organization meeting. Yet the entire planet was distracted into people in Congress arguing over a debt ceiling and whether we were going to be able to open the government up or not. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is already done before it's done. But
right.
With this currency reset, the United States is not in position to fund this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but do they want the reset? I mean, so they're not in a position to fund it.
They don't have a choice.
Okay, there you go. So that's sort of an answer. They don't have a choice. The other thing is, why have we not announced the new TRN as opposed to the FRN? What is the holdup with that? Is that all tied to...
See, here, I don't know who you've been listening to or what calls you listen to, but here's the problem. Everybody thinks it's a holdup because you hear it's happening every day. But it's a methodical process taking place. So, you know, the concept... has been implanted in folks' mind is there's a delay or this person's holding it up or this person's doing that. Now, there is a lot of political posturing, but the process doesn't work that way as if today we got another person delaying it because it's such a bigger perspective and there's so many moving parts to it that you can't just say that this person's holding it up or
right.
That person's holding it up. You follow me?
Yeah, have the new TRNs, are they in place that you're aware of?
From some people I've talked to, the TRNs have been there for quite some time.
Okay, and the last question I have, Dave, this might be to you, thank you very much, is it going to be waking up one day and there's this huge announcement on the main media stream, or is it just going to slowly drip and happen? Like, this one day... Is it says the reval is happening, or is it just, wow, you know, it happened a couple of days ago type of thing?
Well, I can tell you one thing. Once it gets public, how are you going to not cover on the news 8 to 10 million people rushing to their banks to cash in their dinar?
Right.
You think that's
right.
Not going to make the news?
No, I know.
Now,
is there going to be an announcement?
Who knows? The people, you know what, if they don't announce it, I tell you, the public will become more convinced about the scam of our mainstream media and the fact that they've been such in denial and there's a media blackout on it, it would be so obvious. If they don't announce it, it will be such an embarrassment to the media that they will have lost all their credibility. They don't have much credibility as it is now because there's a total media blackout on this thing, and it's very obvious there's a media blackout on it because when this goes public, you're going to have 95% of the American people out there screaming, saying, where did this come from? Why didn't we see this happening? Nobody
right.
was talking about it. And they're going to be actually, to me, and I'm going to be very frank, they're going to be ticked and pissed off at the media and the government because you didn't tell me this was coming. I mean,
well,
it's going to be a shock.
Look at this. And let me add this, too. Just ask yourself from a media standpoint, has anybody seen on any television channel all of these bankers jumping off of buildings?
No.
Nowhere.
Yeah, no.
I'm with you. All right. Well, you know what, you guys, you did answer my questions, and I would just add, the two of you really need to continue this until this happens, because the other garbage that I've read and been part of, listening to it, been drawn into, you guys have cut through all this as a team right now. So I thank you very much for taking my call. And
thanks, Shane.
Yep. Wish the best. Thanks. Thanks, Echo.
All right. Okay. Thanks. You bet. Okay. All right. We're going to continue going on down the line. We're going to Mike in Minnesota. Mike in Minnesota, you're coming up. There you are. Mike, you're on the air with Exo and myself. What can we help you with?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. Great segue from the last caller into my question. I would like to know both of your opinions of the vision that you see once this thing does reset and go live.
I think what it depends on how many people there are that are out there that are actually wanting to be a part of this. There's no way to quantify the numbers. I think we're looking at minimally 8 to 10 million people, and it's all of a sudden it could be an end up pandemonium at the banks, because all these people, I mean, you come back to the fact there's 8 to 10 million people out there, but how many people are listening to programs like this and reading the blog sites each day? It's only a couple hundred thousand. So what's going to happen when the millions of others say, oh, gee, I got some dinar, I think I'll go cash it in? They're not informed. They haven't been involved. I think it's going to be pandemonium and chaos at the banks. And if you ask me part of the reason why part of this is being held up, that's part of it. Because they could have pandemonium, chaos, and anarchy at the banks if they don't have this under control when millions of people want to show up and exchange their money. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that has been one of the biggest reasons why it's gotten too big, it's out of hand for them, and to where they're at the point where they're not certain how they're going to be able to do this without having an angry, irate people who want to cash in and still having to deal with a 95% of the people who have been ignorant and in the dark. Can you see the chaos that that creates on both sides? And I think they're trying to get their hands around this and saying, how are we going to handle this? And they're trying to work out through the logistics. And I think that's part of what's creating some of the delay.
Well, with that being said, then maybe some of the stuff that you're seeing out there on the Internet about stock up on your food and water and everything else that's out there, maybe there is a little bit of truth in all that. I'm just kind of wondering, just for my own family's sake, of what to prepare for. Even though we have dinar, what do you know, how far do we see this dollar dropping, and what does it look like after this takes place? How bad will it get? Does any of your contacts ever share any of that information with you that you would be able to share with us?
Mike, you're going to become an overnight millionaire and have millions of new dollars, so why would you be concerned about the dollar dropping 10 or 20 percentage points? You're coming out so much farther ahead. You know, and let me be really practical. I'm amazed how many people are concerned about the dollar dropping when they're going to be getting 10, 20, and 30 million dollars. Baffles me. I'm sorry, but I'm being really honest when I say that. Is the dollar going to drop? Yes, it's going to drop. But it's amazing how many people misunderstand that. You tell people the dollars are going to drop, and they think they're going to lose money in their banking account. No, all it means is items that are imported into the United States will cost more. And that drop in the dollar is peanuts to the 8 to 10 billion people who have dinar to cash in. I mean,
I understand that, but what to do with the rest of the economy for the people that don't have it is what I'm looking at.
Well, I'll let Exo share in a little bit, and I've stated this publicly on many of the radio programs. I think you're going to see a temporary drop in the dollar, but the dollar will not collapse totally because this is still a global currency. There is more currency, U.S. dollars, outside of the United States than inside the United States. And if the dollar drops so much, it creates a collapse in the economy, not but in the economy around the world. Okay, in the stock market, stock markets want certainty. It's going to create a shock to the stock market, and I think it creates what is called a V formation. It will drop. It will have a fast drop once the dust settles and they begin to realize there are trillions of new dollars being pumped into the economy, and construction projects and renewal projects will be going on all around the world. The market will come screaming back. It's going to be better than it's ever been. That's how I see it. XO, what's your opinion?
Good.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a misconception people have had with the devaluation, because all it means is the prices are going to go up. It's not like your bank account is going to take a haircut.
No, and that's exactly what I was getting at. You know, you're going to have friends and family that don't have dinar, never wanted to get in, never wanted to buy in. You know, how bad is it going to be for these people that you could, you know, help give them some hints now to prepare for what could be happening in their life very soon?
I think he touched on it. Prices go up. Prices of imported items go up 20% to 30%. And that's going to impact them based on how much money they have and how they buy their goods.
I appreciate what you guys are doing. Really good call. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. All right. Thanks, Mike. Okay, we're going to go on to the next caller. We're going to a lady in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Her name is Judy. Judy, you're on the air. What can we help you with?
Hey, hi, you guys. Thanks a lot. Hi, Dave. Judy Cooper. Thank you for continuing
on. Yes, Judy, how are
you? Good, thanks. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Wow, that just spent a whole nother space in my consciousness, the discussion you all just had with the gentleman and the price of goods and all those things I never thought about, and a redistribution of wealth between what will be possibly perceived as the haves and have-nots. I live by myself. Maybe I need to move to Sedona next door to you, Dave, so there's some more like-mindedness, because I can see not from a place of fear from the light worker community, but possibly dynamics will definitely shift in a way that we'll really need to keep our heads and keep our senses so lots of things can go forward in still a kind, loving way. So none of that was my question, but the one question I had was, I saw somewhere, and I'm not sure if it was on the EXO site or yours, Dave, but the, let me think here, there were a couple of questions, the reference to if you were with a group, you would stand a better chance when and currency rate, and again we're back to that, sorry, when you go to cash your money in. I once a month ago went into Wells Fargo and asked them if they could exchange some dinar, and they all, maybe I told you this, looked really frightened, and two of them ran to the back of the bank behind the closed doors. So that may not be the happening that will occur, but I'm kind of wondering about actually approaching a bank, and some of the light workers are hanging on by a thread, and if there is a time period where all of this is happening and there's a rush on banks, et cetera, it makes me want to be first in line, because it might take 7, 8, 9 months before that comes to pass, which is just more of a financial stretch for folks like me and other folks. So if you could comment on that, and it wasn't too long, I'd appreciate it.
Hexo, you want to go ahead?
Well, I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, from a timeline standpoint, I mean, it is what it is. The reality is going to take place. Everybody's not going to be part of it. As a light worker or folks who are hanging on by a string, you know, this paradigm shift is going to put you guys in a position where you're going to have to shine your light. You're going to have to go back and help some of those folks who aren't in the same situation you're about to be in.
Right, and we're prepared for that. That's the beauty of all of this. It's like, wow, we can be making a difference here and really shift things big time. That's so the beauty of that. Thank you for saying that.
Did that kind of help you out?
It did in terms of a group. Dave, did you want to say something? Because I'm not part of a group, so I'm not sure how that...
And I can only tell you what I'm hearing, and I'm hearing this secondhand, so I don't have this as solid info. There was once a time that there were groups, and most of those groups were designed around the China oil contracts. And my understanding is what I have heard. Now, this is secondhand. I can't verify it. But China backed out of that, and those groups are no longer going to get group rates. My understanding is it's either the private contracts that are taking place now or public rate. There are not going to be any of the China oil contract groups. Those groups are not going to get it. They're just going to go over to the public rate.
Okay, so
that's
there's
what
no,
I've been hearing, so.
Okay, so no group signing up thing or don't watch to do that or anything. Just
don't.
I
can't
forward.
Verify that. Judy, I can't verify that comment. I'm only telling you that's what I've heard secondhand.
Okay.
It did come from what I would call some reliable information. I don't want to put things out there that I did say that and it's absolute. Don't know. We
sure,
just don't know.
Sure.
This stuff changes every week. It changes
yeah.
every week.
So. Well, and it helped me
okay.
just knowing that. And I want to just ask quickly about the bank situation, and you may not know this, I don't know, that I understand there are certain banks, and they look like they're, I hate to say this, banks such as Chase, who took my home away from me 4 years ago, so I'm reluctant to go there and change money with them. But in all, and you may not know where the banks are or what they are, or maybe we do and I missed it. Is that, could you address that?
Well, when it becomes a public rate, you can go into any bank that exchanges foreign currency, and almost all of them do. You just go into the bank of your choice. I think any bank is going to be really stupid to not be involved in this because they're going to turn down the potential of having millions of people that are new millionaires coming into their bank, and they're not going to make this available to them. It's like, why don't I just take my competition and give all of my business to them? Because that's exactly what it would be if any bank is not going to be involved in this.
Yeah.
So, Judy, we need to move on.
Understood that. Thank you. Appreciate it, you guys. Okay. And bye.
You bet. Thank you. Folks, I do need to announce that I am getting more people wanting to come on the air tonight than I've ever had in any one single radio program. I'm probably not going to be able to get to everybody tonight because I have never had this many people want to come on the air and talk. So we're going to keep going down the list, but I'm going to try to keep it to around 3 minutes and no more than that with each caller. Okay? So next we're going to Ralph in Plano, Texas. Ralph, you're on the air with Dave and Exo. What can we help you with?
Well, Dave, good to talk with you. I've talked with you about a month ago, and one of the questions I asked back then was at that time there were about two or three bankers that had committed suicide, and I asked you if that was part of this deal. Now the number's way up to 10 or more. What do you think now?
It's what it is. There's no way to quantify this because dead people can't talk to you.
Okay.
You know,
well,
we can speculate on it. We can speculate on it all we want. We can think it's all involved in this because this is what our world is. And you step outside of our world, and most of the people say it's just coincidence.
All right, that's fair enough. And I have two other questions. And one is, I know you. One of the other callers talked about the IMF, but I heard on Fox News tonight that when they passed the law today to give the aid to the Ukraine, they took out the dealing with the IMF, which was one of the important things that was going to be the 2010 issues regarding the IMF. Did you hear about that?
I'll let Exo, because that's what, talk about that, because he wrote on that today.
Well, I mean, we've heard different things, you know. And you guys have to really, excuse me, a little bit more. You guys have to understand the television is not going to tell you what they're really doing. And there's several reasons that you're not going to get the true reality of what's taking place is because if they were to blast everything taking place, it would cause markets to move. It would cause dark liquidity transactions to take place and things of that nature. So, you know, from what we heard on yesterday was that the package was at the Senate and it's going to the House. That's what we got.
Yeah, I had heard today it did get pulled out because the Republicans in the House wouldn't pass that within it, with that IMF issue in it. So it's basically a dead issue. That's my understanding.
Yeah, okay. I read something like that today, and I talked to somebody who actually said they saw that it was taken out. But I have not seen that myself yet. But yeah, that was
the announcement on the news this evening, so I'll just take it as it is. One last question, and that would be that how does Leo Wanta fit into this program?
That's a Dave question there. I don't even know who Leo Wanta is.
Who's Leo
you
Wanta?
Don't.
No, I don't.
Oh, he's been in charge of an extremely large monetary fund under George H.W. Bush, President 41, and I was reading somewhere along the line that this was a big part of his influence in this whole thing, was a very big part of it, and he's been trying to get the money back from the Bush crime family for quite some time. So I was just wondering if you knew anything about how Leo Wanta, his name is Leo Wanta, W-A-N-T-A. You can look it up on the internet. He's quite.
I know, but you will never see anything about this in the mainstream media about Leo Wanta involved in the dinar revalue with George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush. Because if we would have seen it, it would have been there a long time ago. To me, it's part of the media blackout stuff. So until then, it's all just speculation because we have no way of quantifying what's being said.
Right. Well, I certainly agree with that. I've been around this game long enough to know that that's exactly the case. Okay, that was all I had. Well, I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Ralph.
And best of luck to you. I'll look forward to another chat another time.
Okay, thanks. Now, this next gentleman I'm going to bring on the air, he played a really special role in the workshop over the weekend, and he goes by the nickname of Piff. Hey, buddy, you're on the air. How are you today?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing pretty good, actually. Had a fantastic day. How about you?
I'm doing good. Let me just mention this. I want to be really careful because I know I don't want to say too much. But, folks, this gentleman was at the workshop over the weekend. And when we had a raffle when we were giving away dinar and dong, and he walked up and laid on the podium there with me 425K dinar that we gave away to people. And then he kept pulling out these 10 and 20 and 50,000 dong notes that we just kept giving away to people. And I think when all was said and done, Piff, you'd probably given away between four or five million dong that we had given out to the people there at the workshop. And I just want to say thank you so much for what you did.
And I'm calling you because I didn't get a chance really to say goodbye to you. And to thank you for everything that you're doing and taking the time to educate. And it's the way you educate in the manner of speaking to people and just getting people to use their head and to think things through. Because it's not about who's right or wrong, because it'll be different for everybody, just like religion is different for everyone. But religion as a whole is a very special, special spot in everybody's heart. The reason why I'm on the call, I got on late, so I did not, I couldn't get on at first and call in. It's funny that you mentioned that because I sent you the text. I can't get on, and I just wanted to say something to thank you. But there was so much. Everyone that participated in that, and for anyone to think that it was some kind of negative scheme or transaction or something, it truly was just so amazing because what I took away from it has changed my life. I couldn't be more happy. I couldn't feel any more stronger and healthier than I have in many, many months. For the first time in months, I went out and did BP, physically did batting practice, and worked with the youth for 3.5 hours tonight. I took a break from my phone. My thumbs are rested. I got blisters on my hands from swinging a bat. My arms sore from throwing a ball, but I truly enjoyed my afternoon today. And
Piff, can I step in here and just tell folks why you're saying that? See, folks, well, a lot of people don't know. He used to be a professional athlete, and he was very good at what he did. And as a young man, he started taking the steroids before they understood what it was going to be in the long-term effect on his body. And his body has been suffering immensely because of something he had done there years ago. And what he shared with us there at the workshop is he truly does not know how much longer he has left to live. And he goes by the nickname of Piff, which stands for Pay It Forward. And this is a guy who is doing that. He has got lots and lots of dinar and dong, and he's just paying it forward. And he is learning how to give away the most important thing of his life, because here is a guy that doesn't know how much longer he has left to live. And he told us all of that. And then to hear you say that, that your presence there was so encouraging to you, that probably for the first today, for the first time, because he was a professional baseball player. And that's what he was. And to be able to go into the batting cage and just hit, it's the love of his life, and he hasn't been able to do that. And it just had encouraged him a lot. But, folks, for those of you that are listening, this is a man that is living his nickname. And we witnessed that over the weekend when he was at the workshop. And I want to say to you, you're the one that is exemplifying this for us as well. So thank you very much for what you do.
And they really The bigger thing is it's all the people that piff back. And it doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, we saw what we did, and I believe your numbers are up, and why you're going to have a problem here shortly is because I think people are catching on. It's not, piff is not an ego thing for me. I hope I'm not showing that. I brought one of my best friends to the convention. As you guys know, I brought AC Green, which is the Iron Man.
Yeah.
Played the most basketball games in a row without missing. And it's like Cal Ripken's record never being broken. And not only that, he played the game right. And he worked hard, and he was an all-star. He won many world championship rings, but he is a big example in my life, and he's one of those friends that checks on me and makes sure I'm okay and makes sure that I'm doing the right things in life, that I'm not making stupid mistakes, because we all make mistakes. But I'll tell you, the guy knows how to forgive, and he's taught me the miracle of forgiveness. And, it caught fire at your seminar. It caught fire. And the real thing that amazed me was the people that have the plans to pay it forward, and that they're already starting to, and they're already trying to before it even happens. And I know people that have helped people by giving away personal belongings to help people at Christmas times when they don't even have it. You know, I've heard so many good stories. It's not about a dollar amount. Sometimes it can just be a friend there listening for a friend because they're down and desperate because they don't know where to turn. And, I mean, I just saw so much love because of the way the seminar is conducted, which is, you know, a compliment to you, Dave, and your staff and the people around you. As you guys know, I
Thanks
even had my father there. And he for the first time, even though he's kind of been putting the pieces together like other people have, it was very hard for me to admit to him in front of all those people what was going on in my life. And he knew that I was going through health issues, but not why. And it was the right time and the right place to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to leave this lifetime whenever it is, and I hope it's a long ways away, because I've got people piffing to me treatments that hopefully will cure or make my life that much better. And those people, they know who they are, and they're looking out for me, and they're doing more for me than I'm doing for anybody else. I can assure you that, because life is the most precious thing. But
it is. Good.
I plan on continuing to support and help. And I've noticed over the last few weeks that people are changing, and I mean changing for the good. The Denarians. I've lost a lot of friends that I started when I first started doing this, and I thought I made myself clear at the seminar there that my heart's been broken because I've hurt people, because I've defended myself, because some may call it ego, and I'll be honest with you, I do have an ego because I compete, and everyone that competes at a high level, you kind of have to have an ego. But I didn't mean for it to come across as an ego that I'm better than anyone else. What it was is I'm fighting for a cause and many cause, and I will help in any way I can. But in the last week to 2 weeks, I have reconnected with people that I truly believe are very sincere and truly now are starting to get the idea that it's not about me, it's about working together to get through this. And
good.
I was listening to what XO was saying, and I haven't ever talked to XO. Most people know, I don't follow very many people. I just have a focus of paying it forward and trying to encourage and keep people excited in the fact that they made a good choice, but it was a choice they made not because of me, but it's something they believed in. And so I have to agree with XO about something, because I know something firsthand. And XO, you remember when you were just saying that maybe if you were a banker or like a board of director, or you had a high position, or, you know, maybe you can remind me some of the things that you said that would mean that somebody might have exchanged early. Can you remind me some of those things that you said?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, what country club are you in? What board of directors do you sit on? What large organization have you made a charitable contribution to? What country club, golf club, tennis club are you a member of? I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah, that is reality. And a lot of people call that the elite. And one of the things I've been trying to get across to people is there is a new elite that is coming. And that new elite are the people that hold dinars. And what they do with it hopefully will be a situation where their generation will be better than the elite that were before them.
Well, Piff, let's do this. Buddy, I want to make sure I give everybody else tonight time to come on the air.
Sure.
So what I'd like you to call back again next week, okay? And
sure,
we'll probably
sure.
have a little more time there. But I want to be, I always try to make sure that I always give, if they're having the courage to call in and press that number one, I want to make sure at least give them some time to get on the air. So could you just wrap up here and just wrap up your comments?
Yep. I just want to wrap up and, again, thank everyone for coming out and supporting Dave and everyone that, you know, said their prayers and looked out for me and were so kind to visit and were very true to everybody, because I look forward to the next one, and I know other people are looking forward to the next one that you hold, Dave. And let's just keep moving things in the right direction. And I do believe you guys are at the doorstep. And I know that a lot of you guys have been told that many times. But there are things happening that will transpire, and I just hope you guys remember what you guys are learning. And at that, I will sign off now and get busy on the other stuff. And again, thanks for the time, and God bless you all.
Thanks, Biff. Enjoyed it. Okay. Have a good evening. And folks,
you
I just
too.
Want to say I had the pleasure of getting to know that gentleman over the weekend, and he really is true living that when you understand the story of his life and what's been going on for him. How would you be if you were a person that you didn't know how much longer you had left to live because of some health problems? And he has truly, it's transformed his life, where he is literally just giving away millions of dinar and dong everywhere that he is going. So, okay, we're going to go to the next lady because I want to make sure we get through everybody tonight. We have about 18 minutes left. I'm going to a lady by the name of Karen in Winter Springs, Florida. Karen, you're on the air here. How can we help you?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Good.
Hello? Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
How are you tonight?
Good.
I wanted to let you know, Leo Wanta, he was responsible with President Reagan for the protocol of the Reagan-Wanta peace accord between Israel and the Palestinians. And then going on to the bankers, the Fox News, the Five, they mentioned them briefly. But my question is, in regards to the baskets, I know that there's a lot that is not known. With the baskets, if there is some currencies that we have purchased and they are not revaluing at a higher rate, can those be something that we hang on to or don't cash in at all? You know, can you give me some information regarding different baskets and the currencies involved?
Hexa, why don't you go ahead and take that?
All right. Basically, you know, again, this is a speculative investment, so, you know, we hear different things. We have heard things about the Zimbabwe. Some say it's going, some say it's not. We don't know. From what's on the banking screens that we've seen, from the rupiah, the dinar, and the dong, we feel pretty confident those are going. So that's pretty much where it is from a perspective of the speculation. I guess this is a crazy sentence. I guess that's where it is from a perspective of the speculation. Is that a good word, Dave?
Yeah. We don't know.
Does anyone?
It's speculation, but we don't know.
Okay, so there's no idea of, I mean, because there's so many countries, this certainly isn't going to be one basket, correct? Or don't we know even
that? We don't know. There's opinions all over the map on that, Karen.
Okay.
I mean, there's just opinions all over the map on that, so it's hard to say.
Okay. I had purchased about eight different currencies. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
You have a good evening.
Thanks. Okay, have a good evening. Okay, thank you. Okay,
bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to a lady, another lady by the same name of Karen, but this Karen is in Chicago. Karen, how are you tonight?
I'm great, thank you. Hey, question about an end date. If what we're doing, if it's basically going to be a public exchange, then there should be no reason for an NDA, is that correct?
That's my understanding. is that a public exchange will not require an NDA because it isn't any different than exchanging any other currency. It's no different than taking a $100 Canadian bill into a bank. The only thing that's different is the amount in the country. That's when it's a public exchange, and that's when it gets posted on the open foreign exchange market, which it is not there yet.
Okay. All right. Excellent. That's all I wanted. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Okay. Have a good evening. Okay. Now we're going to go on to a lady by the name of Daria, and she lives in Santa Rosa, California. Daria, you're here on the air. What can we help you with?
Hi. Blessings to you guys. Thank you so very, very much, and blessings to all. Okay, so I'm a totally a new one. I just found you guys last week at the end of the week. So I understand this is all speculative, and so I started buying some dinars on Friday and some dongs. But I wanted to know if you had a feeling as to which one that did you guys have any feelings as to having more dongs? Or I bought more dinars, but I can always buy more dongs. And I know it's just speculative. And
I'll give you my opinion really quick, and then I'll let Exo share his. To me, the dinar is the one that is more certain, but the dong is the one that is the better value on the dollar. That's how I look at it in the short version. Exo, what do you got?
Yeah, I agree with that. Basically, the dong is a better ROI. The dinar is in the spotlight with more strings attached.
Okay.
Put it like that.
Oh, well, and then just the other thing is I do admit that I did end up buying all of my stuff basically on eBay because I didn't want to give my driver's license and all that information at the other places. Do they all need to have a certificate of authenticity? I mean, I'm buying brand new uncirculated bills, but so I just wanted to know what you might suggest in regards to that.
Cash is cash when you go to change it in, exchange it. As long as it's not cash,
you don't need that certificate.
But it's all cash. They don't care where you get it. It's just a simple exchange. It's all cash as long as it's not counterfeit.
Okay, and the way you can tell it's not counterfeit is as long as you check if they say it's not counterfeit, but do you have to, and you check it as far as the description goes, how it should look?
You can do that. But here's the difference is when you purchase from certified dealers, they are certifying that the money is good because they had to bring it. They are licensed by the U.S. Treasury to be able to sell those currencies, and they have to bring it in. It has to clear customs. It has to go through all of that stuff of authenticity, and you don't have that guarantee when you buy it on eBay. I'm not saying eBay is a bad place. I'm just saying
I understand.
If there's a place to move counterfeit currency, it would be on eBay.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you so much, and blessings to everybody. Lots and lots of blessings, and for the greater good of all.
Thanks, Daria. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, next we're going to Cara, and she is from Las Vegas. Cara, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good.
My question is, I think for Exo, he was saying, you know, we have a good window to April 1st. If it doesn't happen by April 1st, what could possibly be stopping it or slowing it down this time? Is there something Iraq hasn't finished? And what would the next window be?
Well, I mean, again, this is everything is speculation because nobody really knows, okay?
Right.
So just based on what's taking place, it kind of leads a lot of folks to believe that there's a possibility of something taking place by the 1st. Can it go past that? Of course it could. But from Iraq's standpoint, they pretty much met all their obligations and are out of the door. They're done.
Well, they're not in the WTO yet, though. Don't they have to be in the WTO?
No.
Well, that's interesting because, see, a lot of people, you really have to understand how politics work, I guess you could say. See, a lot of things take place, but they just aren't formally announced. You kind of follow where I'm going, Dave?
Yep.
And, you know, I don't think Iraq would have had a World Trade Organization meeting last week in Switzerland just to be there, you know,
right,
hanging out.
No, I understand what you're saying. I was just curious if it didn't happen by April 1st, because we do have a lot of speculation dates, which are understandable. What would be your next window if you had one in mind?
Ooh.
Because I know people are talking about the election, you know, Maliki
and
all that.
The election would
and...
probably be before the elections, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, before Malachi's election, or Iraqi's election.
Okay. That was the only question I had.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Cara, for calling in.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye. All right. Good night. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to go on to Kirby in Columbus, Ohio. Kirby, you're on the air. What can we help you with?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I'm doing good. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. It's cold. I hope it's warm where you guys are at. We've had a tough winter, that's for sure. The question I had it's been really rough. The question I had was in regard to the dinar. I've heard that that's really a stable currency, as good as gold, so to speak. And I've got dong, and what I was thinking is that once the RV happens, that, you know, cash in when I need them on the dong, but just hold off cashing in the dinar to see what happens with a float, possibly. Because I know XO on his side had talked about how stable the dinar is in regards to being as good as gold. Do you guys think that's a good strategy, just to hold off cashing in and maybe get what you need out the dong to take care of your debts and so forth and hold off?
Go ahead, XO.
Well, I would say the first step is don't rush into the bank. That's the first step. But as far as your currency itself, you know, based on the asset backing from, and let's just go back to the concept of an asset-backed currency with, you know, the United States now backing our currency with the, you know, natural gas, we have oil, natural resources, and then when you look at the dinar, what's behind it, yeah, I would still say that currency is comparable to gold, literally, because of what it's backed by and because of the resources and the oil. And so that kind of ties into the strategy. You know, I don't know what your personal plan is or what you're trying to do or accomplish, but, yeah, we don't encourage anybody to just run into the bank and cash everything out the first day. No.
Yeah, that's what I was gathering.
I wouldn't do that. What do you think, Dave?
Well, that's true. Now, I had heard this, and I haven't had it verified, but when the Kuwaiti dinar revalued, that it started out right around that 340 range, and then for 1 week, it actually popped up to $8 and then fell back down to that 340 range again. And there is a possibility if these are put out on an open float that that could happen. And then the other thing is with the dong, we forget that in 1960, the dong was valued at $2.21. And
yep.
If it comes in at 47,
yeah,
that's the low end, and it has the potential to really go back up quite a bit. And that may be something that you might want to hold. Now, I'm doing what EXO has says. I will cash in the beginning what I want to take care of all my immediate needs, and then I'm watching it day by day. That's
okay.
What I mean.
That's what I figured. Do you think that it would be good to actually physically hold on to your money, put it in a safe, or to go ahead and open a multi-currency account and put it in the bank? I mean, I'm a little hesitant about the banks with all the derivative exposure and all that.
Well, that's kind of why we tell folks that there are several things you want to look at. And I think the most important piece is to understand the wealth side of the bank versus the public retail side of the bank.
Right, okay.
Extremely
okay,
important because there are different things that take place on the wealth and trust side of the bank compared to the retail side of the bank. And I will say that's your most important piece. In reference to the wealth and trust side of the bank, some banks have those separate, some don't. Just do your due diligence.
Yeah, I just put them in the parking lots. I'm just a little, if I physically have the money, that ties me into my last question here. Is there going to be a window that expires that we can exchange this currency down the road? I mean, let's say if I held on to my monies physically in a safe in my possession and waited this out. Let's say I waited 6 months. I mean, would I be in trouble in your opinion?
Once it goes public, it goes public, and it's going to stay out in the public unless the United Nations devalues it and takes it out of the public.
Yeah, that's what I'm just wondering, if there's a backside thing going on.
Yeah. I mean, the dong is already public. It's just its rate. That's all it is.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
okay.
The dong is already a publicly traded currency. The dinar is not. But once it goes public, the only reason the dinar would come off the public is if they went back into a war situation and the United Nations put sanctions on them again.
Okay, got it. And then do you think there'll be actually 1-800 numbers that come out that have a contract rate, in your opinion?
You want to do that, XO?
Well, I'll answer that question this way. Basically, the people that we are associated with on a regular basis, we don't have any intention on calling 1-800 numbers because they're not needed for the most part. But, you know, I think a 1-800 number concept has been blown out of proportion because a 1-800 number is nothing more than a bank PBX system, and they set those up real quickly. It's not like banks don't already have 1-800 numbers, you know?
Well, I guess they were tying to supposedly the contract rate, which would have a limited window, that you might be able to get a contract rate which is going to be above the normal international rate. I mean, that's what's been touted, I guess, with several of them.
I mean, that's
My understanding is that those were involved with the oil credits contracts with China.
Right.
From now, again, this is secondhand, but from what I have heard is that those have gone away, that China has backed out of all those, so you won't see 800 numbers with oil-China contracts. That's secondhand information. I haven't verified that.
Okay.
That's what I've been hearing. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, guys,
okay.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Go to the next person. You guys are doing a great job. Great call.
Thank you.
We need to do
all
that.
Right,
okay, thanks. We got to go really quick. We've only got about 2.5 minutes left, and I got 3 callers. Jeff from Tampa, you got a question about Zim. What can we help you with?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Just
good.
Doing good. Appreciate both of you guys. I'm on both your sites. I just wanted to – I think you touched on it a little bit back here about the Zimbabwe currency. And, you know, there's a lot of talk out there on whether or not it's included in this basket or not. And I know it's a lot of speculation, but for each of you guys, what have you heard from the people that have said that they think it's in there in terms of a revalue, you know, any ranges that you've heard, you know, the intel that's out there?
Go ahead, XO.
11 to 22, some say 6 zeros, some say 9 zeros. Some say it's going, some say it's going 6 months from now. That's what
it
is. Yep.
And Jeff, I'm going to cut you off because I got 2 more callers in 1.5 minutes.
That
okay,
sounds good.
I'll tell
your girl you need to come see
thanks.
Us in Florida and do a seminar.
All right, thanks. Okay, thanks, buddy.
All right, take care.
Okay, now I'm going to Darcy in Kansas. Darcy, you got a question about reserves. Be quick, please.
Yes, just if you guys would both just run down your intel or what your opinion is on if we're going to be able to get reserves or if that's kind of out the window or just give your, if you both of you could just give your intel that you've kind of got on that would be great, please.
Yeah, reserves should be no problem.
Yes. I had in the past said that reserve might have been a problem because the broker wouldn't have those on hand. I have since found out some information that U.S. Treasury follows the authorized brokers, and they will make sure that all reserves are honored. That's the new information that I got about a week ago. Okay?
Awesome.
I'll let you
great.
Go.
Thank you.
I got time for just one more, and we're going to go in. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll take her really quick. It's Jacqueline in Los Angeles, and email listed in our recap. Jacqueline, really quick, what's your question?
Hi, Dave.
Real quick.
God bless you all. God bless us all on this journey. My question was, I'm here alone in L.A. I don't know what I'm supposed to do or where I'm going to get this 800 number from. Do I go in, walk into the bank, and talk to them? What do I do?
Okay, I'm going to answer that off the air because I got to go really quick. Jacqueline, don't worry about that one bit. That is appearing to be old information. Stay tuned with EXO's blog site, my email newsletters. That's when you'll know what to do. We will keep you informed on that. Folks, I want to thank you so much, EXO. Thank you, buddy, for coming on
the air. Thank
you,
Dave.
I wish I had more time, but it's doing it. I'm about ready to get cut off, so I got to go, folks, and say love you all. Thank you. EXO, I want you back again, buddy, okay? Have a good night,
everybody.
I enjoyed
it, Dave. Thank you. All right.
You bet. Thanks. With the Sedona Connection. Love you all. Good night.